I said, we're talking tonight about creation and how God created us to be a part of what he wanted to happen on this world, how he made us for a purpose. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that today. We're going to start at the beginning. So in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and God saw all that he had made, and it was very good. The Bible provides us with a lot of different kinds of information. There is guidance and wisdom in the Proverbs. There's a law throughout the Old Testament. There are songs and poems in the Psalms. And there's written testimony in the Gospels. But the Bible does not always provide us with all of the answers we're looking for. Our modern brains are often asking how or why or the scientific reasons behind creation or how resurrection could possibly happen. And these aren't bad questions. Science is not a bad thing. In fact, I mean, science is God's, right? And everything we discover just draws us closer to who he is. But the Bible wasn't written from a scientific point of view. It was a lot of different authors who wrote down their experiences with God. And so what we have is a beautiful story of how God interacts with humanity. From the moment God created us, to the moment that the first church began, what we have in the Bible is a story of how humans came into relationship with God and their testimony of what it looks like from their point of view. And while this doesn't give us a list of facts like a science textbook would, it does bear witness to what God has done from the beginning of time to interact with his creation. So in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. How? We don't know all the details. There are lots of theories. Why? Again, we don't really know exactly why God created. We don't know exactly when. We don't know exactly where. Because these questions are not the point of the story. What the story tells us is that God did create. That something much bigger and much more powerful than us created something out of nothing. This had never been done before. It's yet to have been done since. And that all-powerful creator of the universe began a relationship with his creation, a relationship with human beings. And we were set apart. We were set apart from the rest of creation. Somehow we were different. We were able to talk to God. We were able to commune with God. And he made us stewards of his creation. He made us to rule over the earth that he had made. And this all-powerful creator saw it, and he said, it was good. So with this ability to choose God and to choose relationship with him, which was kind of unique to humanity, was also the ability to choose against God and to go against our natures and our purpose. This seems a little unique to humanity. This is represented in the story of Adam and Eve when they choose to eat from the tree that God had forbidden. And again, we don't really know why Adam and Eve chose against God in this perfect world. We don't know exactly why the tree was there in the first place. We can't really explain where evil came from or how or why it exists. Some evil we see as a direct consequence of our own actions, right? If I hurt somebody, then the evil that was done to them is my fault. But some things aren't as easy to explain, like natural disasters and diseases and sickness and death. And for some people, actually for a lot of people, this is the end of their faith. How could a good God allow so much evil and bad to happen in his world? And philosophers and theologians, and in fact, many of the biblical writers explored this question. Why is evil here? And while we get some explanations, and they might be a little helpful, they're usually not very satisfying. Because the Bible does not really tell us why evil exists. Instead, it tells us how God worked through the evil, despite the bad that happened to humanity, despite the sin, despite our constant wanting to be involved with that. God worked through humans and for humans to create a new way, a way that was away from the evil. And you see this time and time again. So in the story of Adam and Eve, when they ate from the tree, God kicked them out of the garden. They had desecrated his perfect garden. So he kicked them out, but he didn't leave them there. He clothed them. He allowed them to reproduce and continue to take care of his land. And then when people again were dragged into wickedness, dragged into corruption, he said, okay, that's it. I'm destroying the world with a flood. But he couldn't do that. He saved Noah and his family. He said, okay, here's a new chance to start over again. But again, humans were dragged into wickedness. And so he established a covenant with Abraham and with Israel, saying, okay, you're my people. You're going to show the rest of the world who I am and what good I can do. And again, they messed up. This kept happening over and over and over again until God sent Jesus, his only son, to confront evil. Jesus was God's answer to evil, his ultimate answer. So we have faith not because our lives are perfect, not because we have all of the answers, not because we don't have struggles of our own, but because we believe the God of the Bible continues to work in our lives even today, despite the evil, despite the hardship. And this is the basis of our worldview. The past few weeks, we've been talking a lot about point of view and how we as Christians should be able to confront the world's problems and the apparent evils with a different reaction than despair and hopelessness. Because we have hope. And it's not because we have all the answers. We clearly do not have all the answers. But it's because we believe the story of the Bible. We believe the testimony of the gospel writers that something so amazing happened when Jesus was on the earth that his disciples and large groups of people believed he was the Messiah. They believed he rose from the dead, that he saved the world, that he defeated death and brought God's kingdom with him. There is hope amongst despair. There is something more. And we can't prove it to you in any modern sense of the word, but we can testify about it. We can tell stories of how God continually works through the evil in our own lives, just as the authors of the Bible told us. And we can take part in God's kingdom and affect change in this world now. So how does this affect our point of view? Well, I have some lenses here, camera lens. I don't know anything about photography, but my friend Joel lent these to me, and he said I could say they are whatever I want to say, because he said no one will know. I don't know if that's true. So just pretend with me, I guess. This is, we'll call it, a panoramic lens. And you all know, right? Is that what this is? Yeah, sure. you all have seen a panoramic photo, right? It gives the whole landscape, you know, quite a bit of it at least. You kind of get the whole story. So we call this the God view. God knows the story from beginning to end, and we believe that story. We believe that God created us to be good, that we were to be a part of his world, that we were made perfect. And then something messed up in the middle, right? Evil entered the world, and we were dragged into it. But God continued working through that and sent his son Jesus to ultimately defeat evil, to defeat death. And we know now, we have the guarantee that at the end of time, whenever that may be, that God's kingdom will come in its fullness, and that suffering will be gone. So nothing can separate us from that truth and love. Nothing that happens in life now can separate us from the fact that God is in control and will be victorious in the end. And we believe this because of the work he's already been doing in our lives, because he's already been comforting us, because he's already been giving us peace, because we've already seen his power. But if we only view the world through that lens, we become a little detached from the world itself, right? We kind of are way out here, and we don't think we can affect any real change in this world. And that's not how God views things either. So we're going to zoom in a little bit and look at our wide-angle lens. It looks the same to me, but I think it zooms. Oh, yeah. See? Cool. we're going to call this our worldview. And God cares very much about this world. I mean, he created it, right? So he has to have some investment here. And in fact, he's really concerned about how this world is run. And Joy read to us from Isaiah 58 a couple weeks ago, which is such a powerful passage. I see no harm in reading it again. So it's in your bulletins. We start at verse 6. It says, "Is not this the kind of fasting I have chosen? to loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords of the yoke, to set the oppressed free and break every yoke? Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter? When you see the naked, to clothe them and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood. Then your light will break forth like the dawn, and your healing will quickly appear. Then your righteousness will go before you, and the glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. God's very much concerned about what happens in this world, and way more concerned about how we treat one another than a lot of the other things we like to worry and fight about. And he cares about the systems that are in place that cause oppression and that cause injustice. And not just those other countries, you know, across the sea where it's easy to see what their problems are. It's easy to see how they mistreat women or how they have slavery still and genocide. And those are terrible things, and we should care about those things. But it's also happening in our very own backyard. Homelessness, poverty, the mistreatment of minorities and of immigrants, abuse, people losing their jobs, divorce, it's all around us. And we are responsible to find the systems that are in place that are helping those things continue. Do you know what I'm saying? To find those things that are causing that oppression and to fight against them, to find a better way, just as God would do for us. That's our job. And everyone has a little different idea of how we do that. Some people believe it's the government's responsibility, and so they vote programs and policies in that take care of people who can't take care of themselves. Some people think it's not the government's responsibility, that that the government screws everything up, so it's the church's job or it's our personal job. And sometimes we get so caught up in fighting about whose job it is that no one does the job, which is definitely not what God wanted. God's not really clear on how exactly we go about doing it. He just cares that it gets done. He cares that we stop the oppression, that we free the prisoners, that we take care of the needs of others. And so there are some organizations that are set up to do that, right? There's like Streetlight. They're set up to help get girls off the streets. And certainly the rescue missions that we go and visit, that's their mission. I'm going to read a couple of their mission statements. So Las Vegas Rescue Mission. Through feeding the hungry, support, care, and an introduction to a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, we provide redemption, recovery, and re-entry to the homeless, addicted, and those in need. Long Beach Rescue Mission's mission statement is that they're a place of healing and hope, serving the greater Long Beach community by improving the quality of life of the hurting and homeless through loving and equipping them to be reconciled to God, to self, to family, and to society. These places are answering God's call in a very real way. They're taking care of physical needs, mental needs, and spiritual needs, which is what we desire here. We've said that many times. And while it's great to be able to visit those places and volunteer there, most of us don't have the opportunity or choose not to have the opportunity to serve at a homeless shelter every day. But that doesn't make us any less responsible for the people that come to us for help. And it doesn't mean that when people come to us, we shuffle them off to those places. Oh, there's programs in place. Let's just take you there. That's not what Jesus did. So let's zoom in a little further to our close-up lens. This is the Jesus view. And Jesus, first of all, was God's close-up view of humanity, right? We believe that he was God incarnate, that he was God's way of having hands-on interaction with his people. And even though I can imagine that in Jesus' ministry, he was very busy teaching and discipling and preaching and, you know, in general, just preparing to save the entire world, that there are numerous stories in the Bible where he's interrupted. And at least the stories we have, he's not standing there saying, okay, come back to me later. I'm busy with my ministry. I have other people to deal with. No, in the stories that we have, he stops and he really listens to what's going on and he responds appropriately. And sometimes we're so quick to offer a solution. You know, we're on our pedestal and we think, oh, let me help you, that we just kind of throw money at the problem, or we throw, you know, clothing, or we say, here, you need to be in recovery, or you need to go here, and you need to do this, and we haven't actually heard what the problem is in the first place. And who better to hear from about the problem than the person who's dealing with it? How better to know how to respond than from the person who needs the help? Jesus calls us to respond the way he did. And in Matthew 25, which again, we've read a lot of times, it says, "For I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I needed clothes and you clothed me. I was sick and you looked after me. I was in prison and you came to visit me." And when they ask, "When was this? When did we do these things?" he says, "Truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me." So we need all three of these lenses through which to view the world, and probably other lenses as well. But today we're going to focus on these three. We, first of all, respond to the immediate needs of people as they come to us in a personal and loving way, as if they were our own family and friends. And then we look at the bigger systems in place. Are there systems in place that you can see are oppressive and unjust, places that you can affect change? Maybe that means changing where you spend your money, or what clothes you buy, what foods you eat, what places you support. But ultimately, the reason why we do these things is because we have the God view. We know that ultimately, God is victorious in the end, that through the death and resurrection of Jesus, he has gotten rid of evil. And we are called to be a part of God's kingdom. That's why we were created, to be co-creators with God in a world where there is peace and justice, forgiveness and love. This is our purpose. This is our hope. This is our life's calling. It's the reason why we do what we do here today. It's the reason why this congregation is so supportive of these young people and their gifts and their mission. And it's the reason why our vision statement is what it is, that FBC Scottsdale is to be a light in the community where people come as they are to worship and explore God, to connect with people, and get involved in ministry for the whole person, body, mind, and spirit. If you're here today and you have not already decided to join us on this mission, we would love to have you. And maybe you just have questions about what church is about or who God is or who Jesus is. Maybe you wonder why we believe any of that stuff at all. And you can ask me, you can ask John, you can ask Kelsey, you can ask Donald, there is Donald. But I guarantee you can ask probably the person who's sitting next to you why they believe in the God of the Bible. And they'll give you testimony of what he's done in their life and how he's been powerful in their life. And for those of us who've been on this mission for a long time, which is probably most of us in this room, which lens do you need to pick up again? Where do you need to refocus? What's the situation to which you can bring hope? Do you need help responding to people who come to you in a personal way and need your help? Do you need to ask, I know I need to ask, God for love and patience for those who come to you for help? Even here at church, I mean, I work here, right? I get so busy about, preparing for Sunday morning that when someone comes and asks for help, I'm like, oh, okay, you know, I gotta stop what I'm doing. That's not the right attitude. This is the whole purpose of what we're doing. And if you ask God for love for those people, to love them just as you would love your own family, he will give it to you. Or maybe you need to look at the systems in your life that you're a part of. Are there places where there's in your life, in your work, in your community, where you see injustice happening that you can fight for what's right? Or maybe you are in a place of despair where you have forgotten why you had hope in the first place. You've forgotten why you believe in the God of the Bible. And you need to remember what it is he's done in your life. Or you need to hear somebody else's story about what he's done in theirs. God has created us to do great things with him, which is an incredible calling, and with each other. That's our story and that's our testimony. Just like the stories in the Bible that tell of God's wonders and great works, we have a story to tell of God's great glory in our own lives. And we have a responsibility to share that story and to continue God's great legacy through our own lives and through this church. Thanks. Let's pray together. God, we thank you for the hope and for the identity that comes from knowing that you are our creator. that you love us and you care about us, that you've redeemed us to take part in your kingdom. I pray that you would remind us of the joy of our salvation, that you would so fill us with your love and your peace and your joy that it would just shine out of us, that we'd be able to then share with people who don't have that hope why it is that we have faith in you. In your name we pray, amen.